Robert Leslie, how many years has it been since I've had you on this program? Long time.
It's been a while, but I've been fortunate to be here with you on a few circumstances.
I want you to know that as I perused the book last night, Angels in the ER, I noticed there was not a chapter in there about me.
Well, you haven't finished it yet. And I had to disguise people and use different names. So.
I'm referring, of course, that I've never been called an angel. Anyway, a little bit about Robert Leslie before we get into this book. Tell me something about you.
Well, Manny, as you know, my wife and I came to Rock Hill in 1981, and that's when the hospital was still the old York General, and I've worked in the emergency room there. And then when we moved in 83 or 84 to Piedmont Medical Center, I worked in the emergency room there. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, I've been at Riverview Medical Center since it opened 22 or so years ago.
Okay. And he's not telling you that he's not only married, but he has grown children. And you have, what, four or five grandchildren now?
Well, as of 6 weeks ago, we have five.
Five.
Five grandchildren. My wife is getting significantly older. and we do have four children. One lives here in town with us, and again, five grandchildren.
Good for you. All right. Now, you have always toyed, I guess that's a good way of putting it,
sure,
with writing. You used to write a weekly column for the Charlotte Observer, didn't you?
I did, yes.
All right. And that ran for many years.
7 years.
And the column basically was talking about funny things that were happening in medicine or stories about medicine.
Well, it was, I like to call it human interest. They gave me a significant latitude. I would talk about current medical issues, but also peculiar things that I'd seen or that were going on in the ER maybe, but also in medicine in general.
Right.
So generally, it was human interest.
And that column ran for a number of years.
Right.
All right. But it's been quite a while since you've had that column, too.
That's correct.
So, is that what got you into saying, I have some more stories and I want to put them in a book?
Well, actually, 10 or 12 years ago, I began writing some stories about my experiences in the ER. I enjoyed writing, and I think I can tell a story. The question was whether I could put it into words and on paper. And I started doing that, and then the idea occurred to me that maybe this could be put in the form of a book. So I think about 12 years ago, I actually had an agent in New York who liked the idea and took it to one of the large publishing houses in New York, and I can't remember which one it was now, but took it to the final reading room, and where the decision would be made whether to take it on or not, and they decided not to because they didn't think this material, the ER, would be sellable. And a year later, or 6 months later, actually, the program ER came out.
I was going to say.
Yeah, and I'm thinking,
how about that?
Wait a minute, what's wrong with this picture? So I put it on the shelf and just continued, being a doctor and writing occasionally. I was writing for The Observer. And about a year and a half ago, I decided, I need to look at this again. And for me, Manny, the question was, how do I put this together? It's not a novel. It's not a romance story. It's not, here's how I became an ER doctor. I wanted to share my experiences through the years that I've had in the ER, uplifting, troubling, affirming. And then it occurred to me that I need to do this through the eyes of my faith. And once I decided to do that, it basically wrote itself for me. I was able to put it together very quickly. I had the stories, and now I knew how I wanted to present it. And then there was an issue of finding an agent. And I came across a delightful person, Les Stobey, who has been with the Moody Press and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and is well-respected in the Christian literature community. He took this on and found a publisher in short order. And so I've been working with Harvest House Publishers, and the book was released on August 1st, and it's sort of a crazy thing to have it in print.
Now, but I tell you, it's quite an accomplishment to write a book. I think is people don't understand what's involved with that. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do. Now, during all this time, were you just kind of making notes of interesting stories that were happening in the ER, and you just put them aside to go back to it one day as far as writing this book?
Well, I did, Mike, write some notes. I do not journal. But as I sat down and thought about how do I want to tell this, what are the points that I want to make? And once I decided on a chapter, for instance, on grief, and how do we experience grief, and how do different people experience it in different ways, then there would be three or four cases that I remembered from the past that sprang to my mind, and I'd make notes of those.
Yeah.
And when I wrote a chapter on death, and I called it on Crossing the Bar from Tennyson, I knew what I wanted to write there. The circumstance came to mind. Again, in 25 years, I've seen a lot, not just here, but in Charlotte and Greenville and even in Pickens, South Carolina.
You know, it's interesting, and I had a chance to read only a couple of chapters of this last night. I got a copy late yesterday and had an opportunity to read a couple of chapters, and these are really short stories is what they are. Your first one, The Nature of the Beast, actually with all the beginnings of all your chapters, you're quoting from a piece of scripture, and that kind of sets the tone for what the story is going to be about.
Yes, that's correct.
And this very first story, really it was a couple of stories in the first chapter. The one where the young man comes in, I don't know what his name, Jimmy? I don't know what his name
is. I think so.
I think that's what you used, Jimmy. He was the gunshot wound victim who came in, and as the story tells, you did all the things on him, and he was in pretty good shape after a gunshot wound. He'd had a gunshot wound that went in but did not exit. The bullet was in him somewhere.
That's correct.
And you kept telling Jimmy, who was conscious, that he's going to be all right. His vital signs were good, and the surgeon came down, and they wheeled him up for what you thought would be a quasi, if there is such a thing, routine surgery. And then at the end of the chapter, you see the surgeon come down, and he is just wiped out. He has been working on this young man for over 3 hours. This young man had told you before he was wheeled up there, I'm not going to make it, Doc. I'm going to die. And you kept telling him, no, you're going to be fine.
Right.
You're going to be fine. And at the end of the chapter, he died on the operating table.
That's correct. I'm proud of you for having read that first chapter.
I mean, that was kind of a shocker.
It was a shocker. And this, you know, we've seen a lot of gunshot wounds. I have, and stab wounds. And this fellow did have a gunshot wound of his abdomen. His vital signs were good. Obviously, that's potentially serious. But it was all sort of routine. We got lines going. We got everything lined up. And the surgeon took him for, you're right, what should have been a routine. Let's open him up, see what's there, fix things. And it turned out that the bullet had nicked his aorta and clotted off. And then when they got him onto the table, that clot became dislodged, and he bled out. They gave him multiple units of blood, worked on him for hours, and he was gone. And what was troubling for me was that he looked me in the eye and said, you know, Doc, I'm not going to make it. Somehow he knew that he was going to die. And it was not just a fear, you know, am I going to die? But he looked at me and said, I'm going to die. And I'll never forget that. I always pay attention when a patient, and I think every ER nurse with any experience will tell the same thing, when a patient says, there's something wrong, I'm going to die, we all get a little nervous. But this young man, he knew something that I didn't know, and it didn't change what I was going to do. We did exactly what we were going to do. He needed to go to the operating room, but that was a troubling experience for me.
That same chapter deals with another story, which is really ends up being quite funny. Somebody comes in for treatment, what ends up being a sprained ankle of sorts, and, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes later, her mother comes barreling through, and as I gather, this lady was a rather large lady, dressed in her bathrobe with curlers in her hair and a pair of panties over her curlers, holding everything together, and screaming, where's my baby, where's my baby? And she sees another daughter, you know, another lady on a gurney, and she thinks that's her daughter. And she goes right after you. What have you done? I'm going to kill you. Bye, 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 bye. And you go back and forth like that several times. And then she realizes her daughter's over here and she's fine. Oh, my baby. She's okay. She's okay.
That was a crazy. It was a true story. And you described her very well. And some people who have read the book wonder if that was my wife, Barbara.
No.
But it was a...
I'll protect you, Barbara. Don't worry about it, dear.
It was a peculiar circumstance. You know, the ER is a crazy place at times. And in this circumstance, we had sent this girl around, her daughter, for a routine sprained ankle. And in the meantime, I had a lady come in that had a stroke, a young lady. And she confused one for the other. And she was convinced that her daughter, who had a simple sprained ankle, we had killed her somehow. But she was going to sue us. She was going to take me out in the parking lot and beat on me, I think. But then once she realized,
you described her as slinging you across the room.
I didn't want any part of that. But she was. But then once she saw her daughter come back down the hall in a wheelchair, having had her ankle X-rayed, then she quickly moved on, and everything was peaches and cream. It was wonderful. Oh, here she is, and she forgot the fact that she was going to kill me moments earlier.
And you know, your first chapter is called The Nature of the Beast.
Right.
And basically what you're describing is the tragedy and the, I guess, humor.
Right.
At the same time that it can happen at an ER.
And that's what I tried to do. And I think the title of the chapter, I'm beginning to define the nature of the emergency room. That indeed, you're right. We do see some terrible things, some tragic things, but also some things that are really sort of interesting and unusual.
You know, part of your press sheets that I've gotten here, it says the ER is a difficult and challenging place to be, yet the same pressures and stresses that make this place so challenging also provide an opportunity to experience some of life's greatest wonders and mysteries. And I guess that pretty well summarizes what all these stories are about.
That's what I'm trying to do, in this book. And I think a couple points have guided me in this. Number one, the ER is a great leveler of personages. We are all stripped naked, some literally and some figuratively, but we are all equal in the ER. And you really find out what you're made of. You, as a physician, you find out what you're made of. As a patient or a loved one, you find out how are you going to deal with the things that will affect us all at one point or another. We'll all find ourselves in an emergency room where we'll all be ill or injured or dying. And how are we going to respond? And if this book can help us to deal with that and sort of focus us on that issue, how am I going to respond? What are the important things in my life? And how am I going to deal with these things that will inevitably come our way? And the other point was the title of the book, Angels in the ER. Part of the book, last page, I quote Thomas Aquinas, where he says, "We are like children who stand in the need of masters to enlighten us and direct us, and God has provided for this by appointing his angels to be our teachers and our guides." And I developed that theme in the book because I believe that God does put angels in our path. And some of them, a few of them are doctors, a lot of them are nurses, but most of them are patients and family members. And they're put in our paths to help redirect and guide us. But I also have been impressed that there are some supernatural spiritual encounters and forces at work that also guide us and instruct us.
Yeah, faith is a wonderful thing, isn't it? It shows itself in so many different ways, and I think what you're saying is that when you're in the kind of job I'm in, it can manifest itself who knows in how many different ways.
Yeah, you're right.
The other chapter I got to read was about this interesting individual, Slim, who was one of the, I'll call, regulars at the ER. These are people which every community has, who are homeless, who don't have any food. And I think you were describing a Christmas scene where Slim on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, whatever it was, he comes into the ER, and you know, he's manifesting all these illnesses that he says he has, and you go through your diagnostics, and he really isn't sick at all. What he needs is a great big plate of food from the kitchen, the cafeteria at the hospital. You order that up, and Slim's okay, and in the course of all that, he gets sick and creates a big mess, and I mean a big mess all over the place, which an angel named Lori goes in and puts her rubber gloves on, and she cleans this all up and cleans old Slim up, And it makes you wonder how somebody could really be in that kind of a situation. And this is a regular who comes in and I gather creates some confusion all the time. But then there's a very touching moment right as after everything's done and he's cleaned up and the room's cleaned up. And I'm going to let you describe that.
Well, you did a great job of describing that story. And Slim, in fact, was one of our regulars. And anybody who works in an emergency department knows the term. And it's not a derisive term. There's people who come to visit us on a regular basis. Slim was one of our regulars and usually complained of abdominal pain. Every once in a while, chest pain, usually abdominal pain. And he would come in at all hours of the day and night. And once we determined that he was okay, then if we got him something to eat, in short order, he'd feel better and he'd be ready to leave. He didn't have any place to go to. He occasionally would have people that would put him up, but he was largely homeless. And on this particular instance, he came in, as you described, and with the usual complaint, and it was around Christmas time, and then we took care of him. I realized, I figured that he was okay and nothing bad going on physically, so we did give him something to eat. And then he did have an accident, and this was indeed, I think, one of our angels in the emergency department, this particular nurse, Lori, who took care of him beyond the call of duty and did it in such a fashion. I was walking by the room, looked in, and the interaction between the two, this was not just a sit still, I'm going to clean you up, and then we're going to get you out of here. But she was serving him and ministering to him, and he knew it. And it was a special moment.
And he grabbed, I believe he grabbed her wrist as she was leaving and said something like, you know, thank you or God bless you or something like that. And
He did. It was an acknowledgement that he was not just a regular. He was a person, and he was a human, and he had needs, and he understood that indeed she was ministering to him. And it was a touching moment for her. She didn't do this for his acknowledgement. She did it because she was serving him, and he knew it. And it struck me that indeed, even when we think about our regulars as being nuisances sometime, I'm sure there are people in your life, and in the listeners' lives that sometimes seem to be nuisances. But these are people that need a hand. These are people that need a word. They need some help. And Slim brought that home for me that day.
That's chapter 2 called The Least of These, and it starts off with that famous passage from Matthew. I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I needed clothing, and on and on and on. And it's that's a great story to tie in with that passage.
Well, thanks.
All right, we need to take a mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk, live from Harry and Jean's, home of passionate American food here at I-77 and Dave Law Boulevard. Don't forget their early bird supper specials. Get here between 5 and 6:30, and they have a half a dozen different dinners, all priced at $8.99, right here at Harry and Jean's, across from the cinemas in Manchester Village. Straight Talk also made possible by Carolina First. Carolina First, where we take your banking personally. Back after these words.
You should choose your pharmacy as carefully as your family physician. At Good Pharmacy, the health of our customers is always the primary concern. For over 4 decades, area families have entrusted Good Pharmacy for all their pharmacy needs. This season, call in the Good Pharmacy team. Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
What's your passion? At Harry and Jean's, our passion is your comfort. Our passion is serving you. At Harry and Jean's, our passion is our food. Braised brisket and wine, Maker shrimp and scallops, or our famous H&J burger in Manchester Village across from the cinema. Harry and Jean's, passionate American food.
Wow! Hear that? It's your best friend reacting to your new outfit from The Gap. And that's cash back in your bank account. With Carolina First Relationship Rewards, you'll get up to 30% cash back on debit card purchases at over 100 of your favorite stores and online retailers, including Gap, Shoe Carnival, Foot Locker, BestBuy.com, OfficeMax, and more. So open your cashback checking account today and see how Carolina First is doing whatever it takes. Offers and merchants subject to change. Member FDIC.
And back we are here at Harry and Jean's. Dr. Robert Leslie from Riverview Medical Center is here with us today. We're not talking about Riverview, although that is a fine place to go if you have an ailment. We're talking about Robert's new book, Angels in the ER, which has just come out, right, Robert, as of around the first of the month?
Right, just 3 or 4 weeks ago.
All right, where can people get the book, Angels in the ER?
Well, on this past Saturday, we had a book signing at Shepherd's Fold, so they have it there. And we had a book signing last night at Books A Million, right down the street, and they have it there.
Okay.
So I have a website, Robert Leslie, that's L-E-S-S-L-I-E, robertleslie.com. It will tell you about the book, and there's a whole page of different places that you can get it on the Internet. I know you can get it through Amazon and Barnes & Noble and those places.
All right. As I say, there's about 15 or 16 stories like this in here, and this is an easy read. And trust me, I'm not into heavy reading, and I thoroughly enjoyed the couple of chapters I had time for last night. Put you on the spot here. Is there any one particular story in here that is the one that touched you more than all the others? Or your favorite, I might call it.
Well, there is, and it's the chapters on crossing the bar, and in that chapter I talk about dealing with a young man who his father has just died, and I talk about, he's a stranger to me, but we talk about his relationship with his father, but mainly I share with him something that happened with me and my father and a letter that was written to my father and how it impacted me on several different times in my life. But what I want, that's probably my favorite chapter, but I want to talk about chapter 12, If Tomorrow Never Comes.
Okay.
Because to me, that's a very important message. And I borrowed the phrase from Garth Brooks, of course. And in this chapter, I present the story of a young lady who was on her way to work, and she was T-boned at an intersection here in town and suffered significant brain injury. And she came to the emergency room, and obviously she was not going to survive. It was that traumatic and that catastrophic an injury. Her husband came in to see her. He had been at work, and he came into the ER, and I brought him back to the trauma room, and I explained to him what was going on with his wife, and he obviously was distraught, broke down, but then proceeded to tell me that the night before, he and his wife had argued over some simple, non-important thing, and had broken the cardinal rule of every marriage that you should never let the sun set on your anger. They had not resolved this argument. The next morning, they didn't speak to each other. He got up, got dressed, went to work. And then now here she was, lying on the stretcher. She would never wake up. She would be dead in a few hours. And they would never have the chance to reconcile, never have to have a chance again to tell each other that they loved each other. And that was gone. And it was gone in the blink of an eye. And there's nothing I could do. I couldn't change that. I couldn't help that. And it struck me that this idea of if tomorrow never comes, we need to wonder. And I always think, have I said everything I need to say? Have I done the things I need to do? Because we don't know. Life is so frail. And later on in that chapter, I present a couple who come in. The husband is in his 60s. He's had significant heart disease, and he is having another heart attack, and he has very little heart muscle left. And this is going to be it. His cardiologist has said, if you have another heart attack, there's not anything that we're going to be able to do for you. And so he's had his heart attack. His blood pressure is very low. I call his cardiologist, and he says, there's nothing we can do. Send him up to the CCU, and we'll make him comfortable. But I wasn't going to do that because bright lights, monitors, people running around. And I knew he wasn't going to live very long. So I sat down with him and with his wife, and I explained the circumstances. They knew that this was the end, but I said, I'm going to keep you here in the department as long as you want to be here. And it turned out he lived for another hour, was all he lived, but he was awake and alert, and they were able to spend an hour talking to each other, bringing to closure some, their lives together. And that, to me, was a rare opportunity for me to be able to help them do that. But what a wonderful way, if, as you die, to be able to have that chance. And the contrast between the young man and his wife who had been arguing and would never be reconciled on this side of the bar, and then this couple who were able to talk to each other. So that's an important message that I want, that I would like the readers of this book to take away, and that is that tomorrow may never come, and that in the ER 25 years, I have seen that and seen it many times, too many times, that life is fragile and is snuffed out all too quickly, and many, many times there's business left undone that will not be done, not be finished. So,
you must have had times when you were writing this or reading it back where you had some tears in your eyes.
That was a good question.
I mean, these are very emotional stories.
It's even now, you know, as I read some of these stories, you know, they're all of them are true, which you know, makes it that much harder. But yes, they are they're emotional and not hard to read, but they certainly they still do sometimes cause me to tear.
Well, Robert, good job. I look forward to reading the rest of the book, and I encourage everybody else to get a copy. You heard Robert say Books a Million down here in Manchester has got this book. Shepherd's Fold has got the book as well. And you can go online and find it or go to robertleslie.com and they'll give you all the information. Angels in the ER, really neat book. Thanks for doing this.
Well, thanks for having me, Manny.
And I'll wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Harry and Jean's, home of passionate American food here.